Welcome to EB5 Investment Voice, where attorney insights intersects with immigration investments. If you are a foreign investor, domestic fund manager, or enterprising entrepreneur and want to get the most out of the EB5 program, you have come to the right place. I'm Mark Deal, and I'll be your co-host on this journey. I'm joined by your host, Mona Shaw, and other attorneys at Mona Shaw & Associates, as well as immigration leaders from around the world. So let's get into EB5 Investment Voice.
Mona Shaw, how are you doing today?
We're fine, in the heart of New York City.
I am doing fine in the heart of Atlanta, too. We don't sound as upbeat as we usually are. Is there a reason for that?
Well, I suppose everybody has got this melancholy over them since the elections, and I think it's going to take a bit of time for people to understand and digest and really get used to the change of order.
Exactly. It does take time. I think that's one of the reasons we didn't jump on the microphone right away, because we were still digesting, you know, what does this mean for us? And what does this mean for the future? What does it mean for tomorrow? So luckily we got through, you know, that next day, and we've had a few more days since then, and we've thought about it somewhat. So,
well, we've also been bombarded, literally bombarded with questions and worries from, of course, most of these are from EB5 investors. People not only who have invested, but potential investors. And they're not sure, because there's been so much anti-immigration rhetoric that whether or not EB5 will still be there. A lot of people are worried, will Trump axe the whole program?
Rebecca, you're joining us as well. What do you think about all this?
Oh, well, Mark, thank you for having me on again. And Mona, a shock. I think that's what we're feeling here in New York City.
Right. I think that's the thing with the two coasts and immigration lawyers generally all over. We do have this feeling of this anxiety. But saying that, Mark, we have actually sat down and analyzed the situation. And we have had a little time to reflect, and we've had time to do some research and to read what the pundits are saying, not only about this particular program, but about investments in the U.S. generally. And we decided that we wanted to share this with our audience and put some people's mind at rest with relation to EB5. I wish we could say the same for other areas in immigration.
Yeah, we want to give some hope.
So there's been no specific comment from the Trump campaign, which was obviously not even expected, with relation to the EB5 program, because it's such a small part of immigration. So far, all the pundits and all the immigration lawyers and the blogs, rather, all the blogs have been discussing the major areas that Trump has brought up. Isn't that right, Rebecca?
Yeah. So one of the bigger issues a lot of people are scared is, for instance, the DACA program. For those who don't know what the DACA problem issue is, with the deferred action for childhood arrivals. Because that was an executive order, it's not actual law. A lot of people are thinking that with Trump as president, he can come in and just unilaterally take that away. So that's an issue. We've had some other issues with maybe increased scrutiny on the H-1 program and the L program, just because Trump's main focus is making sure that the American jobs are here for the American people. And so those programs
suggested that he's not going to increase sort of the H-1 visas, etc. But in any event, so much was said. We don't really know how much really is going to be implemented as far as all the other areas of immigration is concerned. But what we do know and what we would love to get back to is EB5.
Yeah, so we've thought that, as I think a lot of people should go on our blog and read Mona's piece. It's a great piece. But in here, we also talk about jobs creation. And
the first point is that we all know that Donald Trump is a real estate mogul, and so much of EB5 is in real estate. So, and so much of New York City has been transformed by EB5 real estate projects, amongst others. So we looked at all of the factors, and that was one of the factors that we looked at, that he's very, very aware of the EB5 program. In fact, when we were doing some research, we came up with some figures that were produced by outside companies. There's one called Mansion from Mansion Global, who managed to get some research from Knight Frank, I believe it is, which is a London-based global real estate consultancy. And they came down with a complete vote of confidence in the Trump administration, stating that they don't see the Trump administration deterring people investing into real estate, into New York, and to other places in the country at all. In fact, they felt that once the shock of the results has died away, then people will come back into the fold, if not stronger, because they feel that the Trump and the Republicans themselves are good for low taxation and very good for pro-investment. But I think the most significant point, well, there are two most significant points that give us hope with EB5. One has been the fact that from the outset, the whole Trump candidacy is based on job creation, and EB5 is a job-creating program. So without a doubt, the two are married together. There really is, it's more of job creation and investment and less of immigration. And I feel that that's the way the Trump administration is going to be looking at this. And if you actually look, we have statistics, Rebecca, right, about the kind of job creation that the EB5 program has brought up.
Yeah, so we've had statistics that show that, alone in California and New York, and these figures are from fiscal year 2010 through 2013, but in California and New York, respectively, we've had 19,000 approximately and 17,000 jobs that were created. But on a basis annually, we've created about 30,000 jobs per year. So these are significant numbers, we think.
And they're not just in California or New York, rather. There's a significant amount in the center states.
Exactly. So and these are jobs, again, with the EB-5 program, they're jobs for U.S. workers. So this is an area where I think...
It's another indication that EB-5 is going to do well. Mm-hmm. And the other issue is that there was so much said during the campaign that Trump is looking to tear up negotiations with the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership. And countries from these agreements are home to companies representing 90% of total inward foreign direct investment into the U.S. And if President Trump is indeed serious about ending these agreements while still bringing investment and economic prosperity into the U.S., he's going to need to ensure that foreign investment continues to be welcomed here. Mm-hmm. And that includes retaining the EB-5 program. And I believe it's been...
$15.4 billion since 2008.
Yeah, that's a lot of money.
So I don't see, I don't think he's going to stop something, having that much money coming into the U.S.
Also, I think the final point, it's not the final point, but another point which really is strongly towards the fact that EB-5 will do well under the Trump presidency is the fact that his name has been utilized twice on two projects. One is a project in Jersey City, which has been handled by his son-in-law, Jared Kushner. And that managed to raise $50 million in EB-5 investments. And then there's a second one in Jupiter, Florida, which is a Trump-branded golf course. So those are two where we know that Donald Trump has been using EB-5, or rather Donald Trump's name is there. And his branding is there. So while he himself is not an actual partner in the financing of any of these developments, I think the very fact that he's willing to license his name suggests really at a minimum support for the program. And it's pretty logical that the program would therefore continue. He wouldn't suddenly stop a program which he himself has used himself.
Yeah, so he's pretty much all over the place. I mean, he has another one, too, using his name in Austin. So,
that's right, mm-hmm. Yeah.
So obviously, President-elect Trump has exposure to the program and possibly even some personal experience with the program. As you mentioned with the stats, we're talking at least three jobs created for each one investor that comes in. And literally, billions of dollars for up to 10,000 foreign nationals in the U.S. Each year. So, I mean, those ratios play into, more money in, more jobs created, and he has experience with it. So we can hope that a Trump presidency isn't going to be devastating for EB-5.
Right. I think we could be quietly confident.
Yes.
Well, Mona, it's not just Rebecca, you, and myself here today. We also have Raymond Lau joining us, don't we?
So, yes, I'm really excited that we do have Raymond here. Raymond is from Guangzhou or Hong Kong, Raymond. Where do you prefer to say you're from?
I was born in Hong Kong, and now I'm doing my business in Guangzhou, China.
Great. And we thought that as so many people come from China on the EB5 program, and especially for our developers as well, and our listeners generally, they like to know what the mood is in China currently with this whole post-election stuff. So who better than Raymond yourself to come in and speak about it? So first of all, a little bit about you for our listeners.
A little bit about myself. Again, I was born in Hong Kong, and I got my education in United States. And then I come back to Guangzhou, China to have my education business initially. And then after that, when I look at it, a lot of my students that I send here for education, they have a need for immigration. So I jump into the EB5 business also.
Well, that is often the big thing for that. I would say 92 to 93% of people who come in the EB5 program, it's something to do with education. Either it's parents for the children, or it's the children here, or there's an educational element, right?
Yeah, again, there's only two issues for the Chinese people who want to immigrate to United States. The first thing is education. The second thing is medication. What I mean, education is the medical system. Even though everybody's complaining about Obama mess up our medical system, but in fact, in China, it's still a long, long way behind. And that's why, like, maybe 90% of the client doing the EB-5 is concerning about the education for the kid. Maybe 10% is concerning about the medical system and about the political more stable in United States.
Well, political stability is always a key factor, especially now in the time of the uncertainty in Europe with Brexit. But what is the mood? What is the current feeling?
The current feeling, in fact, by the recent research, 68% of the Chinese support Trump.
And so 68%?
Yes, 68%. Even though
Trump was saying that he's going to rip up all kinds of deals with China.
Yeah, they only rip up. Trump is going against illegal immigrants, but not going against legitimate immigrants.
That's true.
Only 8% are supporting Hillary, and 24% is in between. So, even though, like, I have to admit that Trump got a big mouth, who don't have that? A big mouth is a characteristic of a U.S. president. Just he got a little bigger one. So, but anyhow, we got to face that. And actually, because he is a businessman, and a lot of the people in China right now want to do the EB-5, they are all businessmen. So that's why in the mood right now, they might sit and wait for what happened at December the 9th. But in fact, I think there would be more investor from China.
Okay, so that's a very positive. That's very positive. That the Trump presidency is actually very positive for EB-5 and more people coming in. I do happen to agree with you, Raymond. I mean, I don't agree with so many of Trump's policies and positions. However, I do feel that for investment and EB-5 in particular, he is the stronger of the two. So anyways, we have some other questions for you. We didn't want to monopolize the whole segment on how everybody feels with Trump. Okay. But you're from Hong Kong, and you're pretty articulate about all of this, explain to us. A lot of people don't understand the difference between agents and people working from mainland China and agents and people working from Hong Kong, because you both seem to be going after the same type of investors, but methodology is different and the way your thought process is different. What is actually the differences between Hong Kong agents and Chinese agents?
Okay.
Mainland Chinese.
Hong Kong was a British colony for 100 years. It just hung over to China in 1997. So I can say, in general, the professional ethic for the Hong Kong agents are more mature.
Okay.
They know the business for a longer term. They've been doing the Canadian immigration, Australian immigration, like for 30 years in history. And for the agency in China, especially for the EB-5 program, the first agency in China I know of doing EB-5 is at 2006.
Yes.
2006. So that is like only 10 years old and versus a 50 years old guy. So that is the biggest difference. And just like the insurance company, if you are mainland China residents, you must go to Hong Kong to buy a Hong Kong policy. It's the same product, but the price are different. And so just there's a border over there. The agency over in Hong Kong could not go to do business in mainland China. Mainland China agency could not go doing business in Hong Kong.
Okay. Yeah. Would a Hong Kong agency be more likely to have investors from other countries like Vietnam or Korea? Or not really?
Not really, because in the Hong Kong agency, they used to live in a very small place in Hong Kong and Kowloon, just a small place with a few million people, not as a big country.
Right.
There's always a colony, so they get used to just letting the neighborhood know what they are doing. And that's it. And
I love Hong Kong. I have to say it's such a vibrant place, and it really makes me feel good when I'm there. But I do enjoy being in Guangzhou too, your hometown. So your area is primarily education, and there are so many people who come into EB-5 who are primarily in the education level, the business. Mm-hmm. Do you see now that there is a move to move away from universities in the United States? Perhaps they're too expensive, and maybe move to other countries like Australia, the UK?
Actually, no, because most of the students, the reason they choose to study in USA is because a unique thing is they speak Chinese. They understand the Chinese culture. When you look at it, when you graduate from your college, what's good about you? What's the difference between you and your classmate graduated at the same university or college? You know Chinese. You understand Chinese. Not only you can speak Chinese, you understand the Chinese culture. And when you just look at the market yourself, and speaking Chinese is pretty important in the United States right now. If you want to be a realtor in California right now,
yes,
Chinese speaking is a must. Okay,
right.
But when you look at when you go to UK, you go to London, it doesn't matter you speak Chinese or not. As soon as you speak English, that's fine. Australia, Singapore.
So language is so important. The culture
the language
is so important.
Is important. When you look back into mainland China, and you can also look at how many companies are from. Like foreign companies, how many is it from United States? How many of them are from Canada? How many of them are from UK? How many of them are from Australia?
Yeah.
And you just look around your neighborhood, you notice that after you finish your study in USA, it should be a little outstanding, I don't want to use the word better, but it's a little outstanding, more useful than you graduate at Canada, UK, or maybe Australia.
Well, that sounds very logical, actually, and quite frankly, I didn't think of that before. But you're absolutely right. There are a lot of professions and jobs now, especially in a country like the US, where the mm-hmm. language and cultural skills are important. We're also seeing a change in the kind of students who come to the U.S., and for EB-5 especially, that they are younger. They're not post-grads anymore.
Yes, and before, because it's due to the economic background in China, like 20 years ago, 30 years ago, when you see a foreign student from China, they got to be a post-grad student, maybe taking a PhD program, being a teaching assistant or a research assistant for the professor, then they can make a living and study in USA, because they could not, their home family could not afford the high tuition fee and the living expense in US. So that's why they must be a postgrad student. Otherwise,
okay.
You cannot be a TA or RA in the school.
Right.
Yeah, working for the dean.
Right.
And right now, when
situations change now.
Changes, so they send their kid out there for high schools. And I always suggest people, education system a little bit different in China and the state. It's a 6-3-3 situation. What I mean is 6 years for elementary study, 3 years for junior high, and 3 years for senior high. In the state, you go from grade 1, is elementary, and you go to grade 12. So if they finish their grade 9, that means they finish the junior high school in China, and I would strongly recommend them to come over here to repeat their grade 9. They finish their junior school when you come from grade one, that is grade nine. They finish their grade nine, that means they finish their junior high school in China. So they have a pretty concrete background about the Chinese culture and the language. And then they will come over here, maybe repeat a grade nine to take another 4 years high school education. That will really help them to adopt to the society.
So when they come here at that age, they come obviously on a student visa, right? At that age, they don't have EB-5 unless their parents had got a green card. What kind of schools do they tend to go into? Are they into private schools or state schools?
Yeah, it is 100% private school. And for private school, we have day school and boarding school. And I 100% recommend boarding school because of the homestay parents are not that stable, and it is hard to get track on the little kid. So I send student over there. Here is for boarding school. Even though there's a lot of day school, can take students.
Wow. Well, I know that you are you're very caring and compassionate with your students, and you come and you check that they're there and they're happy and they're not being bullied. And similarly, you come and you check projects that you're going to recommend for EP5 purposes. What kind of due diligence do you actually do on projects?
For projects, of course, everybody look at the projects. You want a green card, you want the capital B security. Yes, everybody know that. But what I mean by have the green card secure, of course, you also understand is the job creation. So in order, let's say for a lot of real estate development project, if the project is start building the building, and we can really count on the building will be finished, and then you will create 10 jobs. That could be a good project. If a project is sitting there and waiting for a certain amount of investor to invest in, and then the building will start to be developed, and that is a high chance and a high risk. That is one of the very important factor. And the other factor is for all these investors, I will recommend them to stick on a limited partnership situation instead of just a shareholder for the project.
So do you tend to come and you look at projects yourself before you recommend any? That's what you're doing here in the US right now, right?
Yeah, so that's why what I'm doing because I just like the school I sending my student to, I would bang the headmaster to China, meet the parents, meet the student, and then I must be in the school, see how the school is before I send my kid to study at the certain school. So the same scenario falls in the EB-5. I got to meet the EB-5 owner. I got to see the EB-5 lawyer. I have to see the project and see the ongoing process and make sure my client will get their
and
green card.
Control. Okay.
Yeah, because I'm the immigration consultant for them. Even though I'm not a consultant for them, I don't make money for them for their investment. For the investment, I must return with a green card for them.
Well, that's very good to hear. You know, it's wonderful to hear different angles on this, Raymond. You're not the first person we've spoken to on our podcast, but you have a slightly different viewpoint, of course, because of your background. And I would just like to ask you, if, for example, you could just go up 20 blocks from here and speak to Donald Trump himself, what would you ask him? What would you like to see changed about the EB-5 program?
The EB-5 program, just put more restriction on the regional center or TEA or whatever.
Oh, really?
What I mean, restriction is don't have any bad programs. When we look at that, last year there is 40-something regional center be shut down.
Yeah.
Well, so how many investors, the Chinese investor, invest in this kind of program? And that's kind of sad. Not every agent is the same as me. Come over here, look at the project, look at the lawyer, look at everything before I sell it. A lot of them, they just promote it because of it's a good business. They can make money. They just take the risk for the investors. So that's bad.
So you would welcome more integrity measures, basically.
Definitely.
Because we have a program coming up where we're going to just be discussing the new integrity measures which are going to be introduced. And so it's good to hear that that's something that would encourage Chinese investors to come.
Yes.
the yes, more the course. More stricter it is.
Yeah, when the rules are more strict and they know it's kind of safe and they know everything is monitored by the government, nobody is just playing around like the Chicago Conference Center yeah. years ago. That would be even better for the whole industry.
And do you see more or less investors coming in, given the change of government here, given the change of mood? Do you see more or less?
Of course, I will see it. Yes, it's more because one thing is...
You see more investors coming?
Yes, yeah. definitely. Because when we look at the number of students studying in U.S., the big number comes up at 2009. It's 98,000.
98,000 current students? Wow.
No, that is the number of 2009. The number right now is 500,000.
Oh, wow.
After they graduate, of course, they have a chance to do their OPT, their optional pedagogical training. But the sad thing is the quota for H-1B visa is still 65,000 per year.
Well, that we don't expect to go up, by the way, in yeah. this Trump administration.
So the student graduate from the college, especially Chinese student, the percentage of they could get an H-1B is only 8.4%.
Right.
So what happened for the another 91.6% of the student? So EB-5 would be the only option. Or maybe they get married. But I mean, like, EB-5 is the best yeah. option. Yeah, even though if they get the H-1B visa, right, imagine if I am the business owner, I see H-1B student comes in, I won't give him any important projects to handle. It's not because of he or she is not smart enough. It's because like 1 year, 2 years down the road, he will say goodbye to me. And how would I give him something important? So after a student graduates from college, he better get a green card to get the trust for the business owner, get a very decent, nice job, and adopt it to the society.
Thank you.
Raymond, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you for being with us today on EB-5 Investment Voice. The topics presented in this podcast is informational in nature and is not to be taken as specific legal advice. If you have questions on the topics presented in this episode or other investment immigration needs, please contact Mona Shaw and Associates. Mona and her attorney staff can be reached at mshawlaw.com. That's mshahlaw.com. Make sure you don't miss our next episode focusing on a different aspect of the EB-5 program by subscribing to the podcast. While you're at it, leave us a rating on iTunes. If you really found this episode valuable, share it with someone else that could benefit from this information. Until then, I'll see you on the next episode of EB-5 Investment Voice.